question about Matthew 16. I've been preaching Matthew 16 the last couple of years, and this passage that you read in verse 28 has kind of given me some problems, I guess, and to be dogmatic about it. So I was going to ask, because of what verse 27 says, which you didn't read that verse. Does verse 27, now I'll read it here. It says, "For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works." And the very next verse, he says, "Some will not taste death till they see the coming of the Son of Man in his kingdom." So in the verse 27, he's going to reward each according to the works. Sounds like Judgment Day, right next to what sounds like the coming of the church. Can you explain that? And then I have a follow-up.
Well, I don't know if I can explain it that will satisfy, you know, the problems you may have with it. But it just seems to me that in verse 27, he's talking about the second coming. And in verse 28, he's talking about the kingdom in this situation. They seem to be two different events under consideration. Sometimes you're going to find in the scripture that both two events are kind of placed side by side, and there's not any, hardly any difference in the two. In Matthew 24, which we didn't go into, there are some coming passages really close to one another, that one appears to be the destruction of Jerusalem, the other appears to be the second coming of Christ, and they occur very close, very closely related there. And I think that would be the situation here. Verse 27, at least to me, seems to be referring to the second coming.
I think I agree with you. I was going to tell you.
You're my favorite nephew.
I read somebody on this, and they said that they were talking about the Danielic prophecy of the Son of Man in Daniel 7, 13 through 14, which seems to be the background for both of these statements, and how sometimes that can be used by Jesus, that prophecy, in an inaugurated sense and sometimes in a consummated sense. And he proposed that verse 27 was the consummated interpretation of that, and that verse 28, the inaugurated interpretation. And that sounded correct. But I'm glad we agree. I was just going to see if you could confirm that.
Well, that sounds very good.
Thanks very much. Excellent. So I have two questions that are connected. The first, are there any prophecies of the second coming of Jesus in the Old Testament?
Well, I'm on plead ignorance at this point. I hadn't thought about that.
Well, connected to it, but this relates to something that you
did. Well, if I don't know the first one, how can you do the second?
Connected, but we'll see. We'll see if we can work through it. Based on what you shared about Acts 1:11 and the implications of the second coming being a visible coming, in Revelation 1:7, "Behold, he is coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him, even they who pierced him, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn because of him." And the connection that is evident or apparent between that statement and Zechariah 12, verses 10 through 14, when he says, "I will pour on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and supplication, then they will look on me whom they pierced. Yes, they will mourn for him as one mourns for his only son." So there's at least similar language. And I would think that a millennialist would connect Acts 1:11 and this passage in Revelation and the passage in Zechariah to have the visible return of Jesus, something that the Jews, the nation Israel, those who pierced him, has some special connection here, and it's in Jerusalem. Now, I don't believe that myself, but I wonder if you can help me work through this apparent similarity.
Yeah. You know, an interesting thought on that, that, you know, every eye will see him. That same phraseology is used in Matthew 24, you know, 29 and 30 in there. And that seems to be a passage, at least to me, referring to the destruction of Jerusalem. And yet the same idea is there, that eyes will see him. So the Revelation 1:7 passage, at least on first glance, seems to be talking about the second coming, that everyone will see him. And George may have something to add on that. He understands it far better than I do. And I'm not sure that I can really answer that your question on that about how they combine all these things together to come up with their view. Because you can do that with a whole lot of different things. Take this, that, and everything that maybe they sound alike and put them together. Someone said that similarity is not identity. What that means is just because something sounds the same doesn't mean that it is the same. Jesus in Revelation 5 is called the lion. Satan in 1 Peter 5:8 is called a lion. Just because it's similar doesn't mean identity. The day of the Lord occurs several times in the Bible. You know, sometimes the day of the Lord is a destruction upon a country. But day of the Lord in 2 Peter 3 seems to be talking about the second coming of Christ. All of these days of the Lord, of course, point forward to the last day of the Lord. And all that I would say is, you know, when people start lumping together these scriptures and come up with a concept that we in the church just do not understand, then other scriptures don't seem to teach that, then I'd be aware of it. I'd take caution in it.
You did a great job, Doug. I really enjoyed your presentation.
Thank you.
I don't know if I can respond intelligently to anything Clint just asked or said, but I do think there's something that you said here about Matthew 24 that I would like to present for your consideration. I think I've changed my views on Matthew 24. I don't think it's quite as easy to take chapter 24 and just divide it in half between verse 34 and 35 and say everything that happened before verse 34, that's all Jerusalem's destruction, and then everything after that is the second coming. I don't think it's quite that easy. And this passage in verse 27, for as lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. I don't think that's a reference to Jerusalem's destruction. Mm-hmm. I think it's a reference to the second coming of Christ. And I think what he's saying in the previous verses, he said, therefore, if they say, look, he's in the desert, don't go out. Or, look, he's in the inner rooms, don't believe it. And so these people that are facing Jerusalem's destruction, this chapter does deal with Jerusalem's destruction, and those people that are facing that destruction that's coming shouldn't expect some appearing of the Messiah that's going to stop that destruction and allow Jerusalem to stand, and they can just stay in the city and everything will be okay. Because he says, I'll tell you why you shouldn't believe that the Messiah or salvation is in some secret place, because when the Lord comes again, it's going to be like lightning that shines from the east to the west. And you won't need somebody to tell you he's in some secret room or some secret desert place, because it'll be obvious. Every eye will see him. Mm-hmm. And so I take verse 27 then to be a parenthetical expression to contrast what's happening in Jerusalem with the second coming.
No, I agree. I think so too. And I've changed on that too, because I used to think everything from verse 3 to verse 34 was all destruction of Jerusalem. And I still do, basically. I still do. Just that one passage there, that verse 27, I do think is a reference to the second coming. But I don't think it's a part of necessarily of the destruction of Jerusalem. It's kind of an aside,
right?
Based upon these false messiahs that people are reporting. And so I don't think it's intended to take that and try to make that anything to do with the destruction of Jerusalem. But I don't think it changes the fact that everything else in there is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. It's just an aside. It's a parenthesis, like you say.
Right.
But it's not talking about the destruction of Jerusalem.
I think that's right.
Now, would you take that 29, 30, and 31 are destruction of Jerusalem?
No. I think that's
You think that's second coming?
Yes, I do.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
One thing I wanted to say without getting any further into Matthew 24 is in Hebrews 9 and verse 28, those who eagerly await him. You know, I don't know that I can say that I am eagerly awaiting the second coming of Christ. I'm pretty happy right now for life to just keep on going. I enjoy my life. When a bad thunderstorm rolls through Oklahoma and everything's dark and gray and it's thundering real loud, I start getting a little bit worried and wondering, is this it? You know, is this the second coming happening right now? And I get a little frightened to think about the Lord's second coming. I think the reason that I'm not as eager as this passage is talking is because I'm not being persecuted. And I think if I felt like the government could show up at my door today, they might bust through my door today and take my wife away from me. They might confiscate all my property. I might be eager for the Lord to come back and do something about this persecution, this unjust persecution that I'm going through. And I think those people that the writer was writing the book of Hebrews, who they were going through great persecution, and I think that's what was encouraging some of them to reconsider the church and go back into Judaism, is because they were being persecuted, and they were, some of them were thinking that the church isn't worth all this.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to give up. I'm going to go back to my old Jewish religion. And the ones that were being faithful, I think they were eagerly waiting for the Lord's second coming to set some of this right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why sometimes we aren't so eager for the Lord's second return.
Yeah, it could be. And when we think about the Lord's coming, while there's that human element that may have some anticipation, when you can think about it just from a scriptural point of view, you know, take the human side out of it, what's going to happen at the second coming? We're going to heaven. You know, that's the scriptural teaching of it, and that's what the Lord intends us to live up to. We don't always live up to that. We don't always live up to a lot of things. You know, that's why we live this life, because we're striving to live up to these things. Paul would say basically the same thing in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 8. You know, he was about to die, and he's talking about those who love the Lord's appearing. So, you know, and maybe in moments of our weakness, we're not always what we should be. But when we can step back and just look at the scriptures and what they say, it's a time of joy. The Lord's coming is a time of joy. And Lord, help us be ready when that time comes.
Adam Bombay.
Well, this got a little more complicated. I think George's explanation on first Matthew 24, verse 27, and what you said is right. I think this is a suggested conversation here. Like when we're preaching, sometimes we say, so-and-so said to me this, and I said that. And we're talking to this audience out here, and so-and-so may or may not even be here. And so this one person says in this conversation, look, he's in the desert. He says, do not go out there. Look, he's in the inner room. Don't believe it. When the Lord does come for his second coming, you'll be the first to know. Nobody's going to have to tell you. But he's not changed the subject to start talking about the second coming.
Yeah.
He just answered the proposed statement,
and
he moves on. But I do think that verses 28 through 31 goes back to discussing the destruction of Jerusalem, and I think it's part of that same congregation. His second argument is, wherever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Now, in Luke 17:37, I believe it is, That same phrase is used definitely in reference to the second coming, but I think the phrase is just a proverbial phrase, mm-hmm. and eagles would be better interpreted as vultures. Mm-hmm. Where there's a dead body, the vultures will be, and it's talking about a spiritual situation. And the same thing would apply at the destruction of Jerusalem as at the end of time. And then I think verses 29 to 31 are, of course, a figurative reference to the destruction of the nation of Israel and the spread of the gospel throughout the world. So I think that I do think that the discussion, verses 4 to 34, is the destruction of Jerusalem. But I think verse 27 is a reference to the second coming, but it's incidental. I don't know if it's parenthetical, but it's incidental to the discussion.
Mm. Yeah. No, I agree with you. At least for myself, I understand that 29, 30, 31 still to be referring to the destruction of Jerusalem using apocalyptic language.
Doug, since you have a little bit of time, can for some of these younger folks, can you show, maybe you have some slides where we talk about the coming and you're talking about judgment in the Old Testament where visitation refers to judgment when God would visit people?
Mm-hmm. Okay, in Isaiah 19, verse 1, the burden of the Lord against Egypt. Behold, the Lord rides on a swift cloud and will come into Egypt. The idols of Egypt will totter at his presence, and the heart of the Egypt will melt in its midst. I will set Egyptians against Egyptians. Everyone will fight against his brother, everyone against his neighbor, city against city, kingdom against kingdom, and continue. You know, that describes a coming of the Lord, but it doesn't appear to be the second coming of the Lord, Jesus. It appears to be a coming of the Lord in judgment upon the Egyptians. Now, that expression, the day of the Lord, very similar to that, and like in Joel 1 and verse 15, the Bible talks about the day of the Lord coming upon Judah. And in the context, it appears like it was at one time was a locust plague. And it seems to be the Lord judging Judah for their wicked ways. And so he comes upon them in that sense to judge them for their wicked ways so they will repent. And there are several scriptures that use that expression, the day of the Lord, and other expressions that use these idea of comings, that he's coming upon them. That expression, he's coming in clouds, is kind of interesting because when we think of that expression, coming in the clouds, that clouds, the Lord oftentimes sort of appears in a cloud that describes something awesome and majestic and powerful. Certainly, when the Lord came in judgment upon Egypt, and came in the clouds, that's a picture of something awesome and amazing and powerful, the Lord coming. When the Lord comes in the clouds upon Jerusalem, same thing. That's something awesome. In Daniel 7, 13 and 14, the Bible there talks about the Lord coming in clouds to the Ancient of Days. That seems to be referring to the Lord's ascension to heaven to sit on the right hand of God and to be anointed the Messiah and everything. So there's a lot of figurative, this kind of language, apocalyptic type of language, that is referring to the Lord's judging nations and people and not necessarily the second coming. Now, I don't know if I've just wandered all over creation in that, but...
No, that was good. I think that's helpful to everybody. All right, our last question. George wants to have one more. No, I'm not rebutting anybody here. I just wanted to make an observation. I was telling some young men this yesterday at the supper table about the Lord's second coming. And I find this interesting. There's a parable here at the end of Matthew chapter 24 about this faithful servant and evil servant. Mm-hmm. And then the next parable starts in Matthew 25 about the 10 virgins. 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. And these two parables, one after the other, are teaching us something about the Lord's second coming that I just found was interesting. I just thought I'd share it. The story of the evil servant, he saw that the Lord delayed his coming. And so he began to eat and to drink and get drunk and beat the fellow servants. And the Lord came when he wasn't ready for him. And he was lost. The next parable is about these five foolish virgins. And the Lord delayed. And they weren't ready because of the delay. They didn't have enough oil with them and they had to go buy some more oil. And when you put the two parables together, one parable is saying the Lord could come sooner than you think, like the evil servant's case. And then the other parable is saying the Lord could delay longer than you think. And that's the parable of the 10 virgins. And together they're saying, we don't know when the Lord's going to come. It could be a long delay. And all of these commentaries that are saying the disciples, the apostles, the writers of the Bible, Jesus himself was predicting a soon second coming within their lifetime. And that's just not true. The parable of the 10 virgins illustrates the Lord taught it was possible there could be a long delay. And it's not necessarily going to be something that happens immediately. Mm-hmm. So both of the parables together teach it could be any moment and it could be 2,000 years from now.
Yeah.
So,
and to top it off, there are a lot of songs, you know, religious songs that also seem to imply the Lord is coming soon. And he may be, but he may not be. You know, it's hard to say that he's coming soon as far as our time is concerned. That's good.